Hey, it's Christine with Storyworthy. Today on the show, writer Peter Gulke talks about his three brushes with death.
And so I was racing my friend down this little single trail, going over these hills, and I came down, I went around him and went down this steep incline, and my brakes went out. When your brakes go out and you're going fast on a mountain bike, suddenly your speed increases like doubles, it feels like it. So there, I was coming to a turn and I had to make this turn or I was gonna go over the side of the hill. And so I made the turn, but then I hit a little rise and a bump in the road and I launched off this hill. The trail just dropped off and I flew and then I landed right on my chest and I slid down the shale rock hill, stood up and all the skin had been ripped off of the front of my body. And then my friend rode up and he said, "Oh man, your nipple's gone."
Today on the show, the very talented writer Peter Gulke talks about his three brushes with death. Stay close.
Hey, my name is Peter Gulke, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener to Storyworthy, welcome to the show. So I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week by comedian Deanne Smith. She is smart, she is interesting, and she told a great story about getting thrown out of her apartment, her and her girlfriend getting thrown out of an apartment. But it's funny, trust me. Well, they were in Mexico and there were drugs. This is never good, but it was very funny. So if you guys haven't heard it, go back and listen to Deanne Smith. But not today, because today I'm here with a really interesting person that I don't know. Like, I don't know him at all. So this is the first time I'm really meeting him. But he was recommended from comedian Eddie Feldman, who you remember was on the show a couple of weeks ago, talking about the night that Johnny Carson died. That's not funny. That's not funny that Johnny Carson died. But
now it is.
It's true. It's true. But anyway, go back, listen to Eddie Feldman's episode about the Tonight Show and the night that Johnny Carson died. They all went over to the Jay Leno, the studio at NBC there. And anyway, a lot of people were there and he drops a lot of names. Go back, listen to that as well. Okay, so now Eddie Feldman says to me, "Hey, Christine, I'm going to tell you who you should talk to. Peter Gulke. He's a writer." And I say, that's interesting. But I trust Eddie Feldman because he's so funny. And sure enough, here I am with writer Peter Gulke, and he brings forth the topic, Three Brushes with Death. Three Brushes with Death with writer Peter Gulke. So welcome, Peter. I'm so glad you're here.
Hey, this is great. It's great to do something I never get a chance to do, which is talk to, you
know. Oh, is that right? Why do you think that is?
Well, I just... Since I've been writing, I was a stand-up comic for 18 years and just working the road and stuff. And so I stopped doing that about 2001. Sporadically, I would get up just because I wanted to get back into it, but I really never could. And so you kind of miss that interaction with people because you just suddenly you're going from where every night you're in front of like 200 people or three people. And then suddenly you're like in a room for the rest of your life, locked in a room, just typing on a typewriter by yourself. So it's kind of a quick, a big adjustment, you know.
And now it hasn't been that big of an adjustment for COVID, though, for you, though, because if you've just been inside on the typewriter anyway.
Yeah,
on the typewriter. Yeah, on your old what were they called?
Remington typewriter or whatever
the
it was.
Remington.
Yeah. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
And then went bing.
Luckily, I came into, I started writing just as the first word processor came out, the Big Brother word processor where you could see three words,
gosh.
You know.
And,
so I was able to skip the typewriter. And I've always had sort of I've had the same routine since I was a kid, though. So, and it fits right into this COVID thing.
Well, so, I have to hear this routine.
Well, since I was a kid, I wake up like 5 or 6 in the morning, and then my routine is so interesting. It's not.
I want to hear this because I have four sisters, but one of my sisters, she says with a straight face that I have had a bowl of Cocoa Puffs with milk every day since I was 15 years old. Like,
wow.
Or you know, like she's had the same cereal.
Have you looked at the ingredients?
Cocoa Puffs. I'm trying to think. That was what she liked as a child. Now it's probably like that fucking, you know, what is that stuff that's like steel oats or something? And it's like, it hurts your teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Now but that's what she's probably.
I think it does have cornmeal in it though, right? Cornmeal and something.
I don't know. But she has a routine. I mean, what she eats for breakfast.
Yeah.
So was this what you're talking about?
Yeah, I wake up and I either go surfing or running. And then I come home and I have my coffee with really what people would say is depressing music, but it's to me it's just sort of Americana, kind of like Alexi Murdoch. Have you ever heard of him, Alexi Murdoch?
Of course, I love him so much.
So
you know what? Let me tell you something about Alexi Murdoch. He is my go-to music when I get a massage.
Really? Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, because it's so easy going and it's so soft. I also like Jack Johnson. Okay, go on.
And Nick Drake. And
exactly.
I listen to a lot of people who have died. So that's like, you know, my kids listening to Christmas music now, that's all they can listen to for 24/7, you know? And we're just listening to Christmas music sung by dead people is all we're listening to now.
Especially the haunted voices ones when they're like, ah, there's like that whole choir behind those voices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and anything, Frank Sinatra, anything, those standards that they play at the Grove, all that stuff is, they're all dead.
Yeah, but I like to listen to sort of this sad music, you know, in the morning for some reason.
So is it like Jim Croce?
It is kind of like that, that... Beck, but mostly like Sea Change and
this other one that he did, and then
Nick Drake and you know people like that. That people walk in on
Elliot Smith.
I do, yeah, Elliot Smith. So people would say that's like depressing music, you know. Most people that walk through,
but those people have committed suicide.
Yeah, I know. That's true. Nick Drake and Elliot Smith and who else? Alexi Murdoch hasn't done it yet, but he will eventually.
Oh, stop it.
But, you know, it's the sadness, though, that I kind of get into that with my coffee and whatever I'm eating. It feels good for some reason, is that, and it kind of gets me into a place where I settle into writing a lot better if I'm sad. And so it's tapping into, this mellow sort of, not depressing, sad, emotional state. And I think it's because I have kind of a little ADHD. And so it just mellows it all out, you know.
It's a meditation for you.
Yeah. And then I write for a few hours and then have a smoothie and then write for a few more hours. And that's about it.
What's in your smoothie?
I put every day for the last 20 years.
Oh,
yeah. I put a little bit of juice, rice milk, frozen banana, strawberry, blueberries, mango, all frozen, and then a little bit of whey protein powder. And,
wow.
And that's it. Every day for like 20 years.
Wow. You are a man after my own heart. I have a smoothie every day. Almost that same stuff, but I use almond milk, and I don't do juice, but I do yogurt.
Oh, okay.
But see, I do the same frozen thing.
This is the for most people. This is the most boring conversation they've ever heard.
Oh,
they're
not
ready to
my
blow
audience.
Their brains
they
out.
Love it. No, it's not true. My audience loves this. Absolutely, I'll get mail.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Well, I'll send out my smoothie recipe if anyone's interested.
That's right. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah,
but Peter, I don't. You're a comedy writer. I mean, essentially, I know I'm looking at all your credits, but so essentially, you are a comedy writer.
Yeah, yeah. I did stand up. I didn't start writing until late, and because I didn't read a book until I was about 22 years old.
Get out of here!
I swear, I did not read a book.
That's
I read some comic books, and I didn't open a school book at all. And yeah. I would just go and take the test. I was on a full scholarship to UCLA for gymnastics. And,
wow.
And so I was there for a year, and I hadn't really, all I would do is go and take the tests, and I would get about a C average, you know. But I never opened a
good
book.
Good enough.
And then I quit UCLA. I quit a full ride at UCLA because I was bored. And I just kind of kept going to school here and there. But I would mostly just go to the beach for like... For like 4 years, I just went to the beach, and I quit college 3 units short of graduating, and
oh,
then I
gosh.
I know my parents loved.
Do you regret that?
No, I don't really regret it at all. I didn't Good. Like school. I wasn't really interested in it, and so then I when I got into stand up, I started to write. I just started to type out my act, so that I knew what I was doing. And so I learned how to type by typing out my act. And then eventually I wrote a sketch, and then I bought a little video camera, started to shoot some things, and then just progressed from there. But
did you learn to type properly?
I did, yeah. I just made sure my keys, I don't look at the keyboard when I type. And
Are you
really,
a wizard?
I am a wizard, yes. I can type pretty fast. Well, I don't really watch other people type, so I don't know. But I think I'm pretty fast.
Yeah.
And
I can't believe that nobody tried to get you to read a book before the age of 22.
No, and you
like
know
your
what?
Your mom and dad, nobody said,
nobody.
You know, we should throw these books out around the house, and maybe mm-hmm. Peter will pick one up.
No, they were too busy just with, you know, living week to week, you know, paycheck to paycheck. So they didn't really have much time for me to spend on looking out for what I was doing at all, or, you know, I was out killing guys and stuff.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had three brothers. And
Jesus, four boys. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was...
You watched each other. You're the youngest.
No, I'm the second to the youngest. And,
oh, interesting.
But my parents are great, but they didn't really push me too hard, you know? And... I think they kind of gave up. When I was in third grade, the nun, I went to St. Augustine's Elementary School, which is right down the street here, and she told my mom at a parent conference, a parent-teacher meeting when I was in fourth grade, she said, Mrs. Galky, don't expect too much from your son. And so my mother was devastated, you know? You know, when somebody tells... Oh, someone that their son just don't expect too much from them. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if they meant that I was somehow disabled or something, you know, like I was mentally unstable. But from that moment on, though, my mother never told me that, but I know that that affected the way that she treated me. I was never pushed, and I just sort of wandered the neighborhood, you know, and got into trouble.
I wonder how you got the discipline for gymnastics.
Well, because it was just fun. Because I was very physical. Like I would just climb trees and stuff like that. So it was sort of, I played football, but then football was just too violent. You know, I keep getting hit in the face and bloody noses and stuff. Whereas gymnastics were mostly most of my friends were Japanese, and it was a whole different kind of thing for me. And you could talk to people without them hitting you. And so,
and did you, you know, because you're the one from Southern California,
mm-hmm.
you're the one. And did you work out a lot on the beach then? Is that where you primarily did your gymnastics?
When I was in gymnastics, we won the state finals, and we had the highest recorded gymnastics point total in the nation.
In high school,
history at that point in high school, yeah. Venice High had a great gymnastics team, and so then I got a scholarship to UCLA based on gymnastics. And but I still hadn't read a book until I first started going on the road.
Did you have to take SATs or anything?
I don't remember taking the SATs. I don't know. I have no memory of that. I have no memory of a score or anything.
And that is so funny. I mean. I it's very similar to mine, and my audience knows that I never opened a book. I went to the library twice in 4 years, both times to meet somebody.
Really?
You know, like
Yeah.
My father worked there, so I had a free ride. So when it came time to take the SATs, I basically just had to get my name signed on that piece of paper, and I scored an 860 on the
really?
SATs.
Really? Is that good?
Yeah. No, it's not. It's like a 55%.
Oh,
and
really?
I'm probably wrong, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but I got by. I knew to get by, and I did mm-hmm. graduate when I was 21. I got out of college because I knew just stick your head down and get it out of the way. And I definitely don't think I ever needed that degree, but I did in terms of getting the next jobs because I needed to show them that piece of paper.
Yeah. See, that's great to know that, you know? Like I never knew that. I never had any I didn't know why I was going to school or how it would benefit me at all.
I
was just sort of wandering from one thing to the next. Whatever interested me, you know.
What a great life. You lead like the life everybody wants. That's a great life.
Yeah, well, I've never tried to do anything. I never really had a goal in mind. I just sort of fell into whatever kind of came along, you know.
But gymnastics seems so specific. It seems like it's one of those sports where the mom drives them to the gym at 5 a.m. and they need ice time or something.
Well, I didn't start until I got into high school. So I was much older. And so then I just jumped in and I just got really good at a couple of events. And so and then the gymnastics really led to my comedy because I started.
Real quick, what were the events that you were good at the best?
Florex, tumbling, and pommel horse. That thing where you spin around.
Yeah, that would scare the shit out of me. Were you good at it then? You must have been great.
I was good, yeah, I was good. And then I got bored. When I was at UCLA, I got bored with gymnastics. And
how many hours a day were you working on gymnastics?
I would be in the gym for maybe 3 hours a day, but I would work out for maybe 25 minutes, and then I would just goof around. And then because I didn't have any schoolwork.
These things came so easy to you. Okay, that's great.
And then I started to do a comedy floor exercise routine. I just out of boredom, I started to put together some odd, weird things together in a routine, and I would perform it. I started to perform it at invitational gymnastics meets in front of huge crowds. So I would get big laughs for this thing, and I did that for a little while, and then later on, I wanted to get it on the Gong Show, and my friend said, hey, we could make $600 if we go on the Gong Show, you know. So why don't you put some stuff together so we can make some money? I don't know how he was involved, you know. And so I said, sure, okay. So I went to the Comedy Store, the original room, and I put together a few to see what they did so I could do some of these weird things that I did. And for the Gong Show, I needed a place to test it out. So I went to the Comedy Store, the original room, and signed up.
First, Sunday night.
Honestly, it was a Monday night then.
Okay.
And so, but first I went and I watched to see what they did. And I saw this guy, Lenny Schultz, who was pouring cereal on his head on stage. And I said, well, I could do that. And so I put some things together and I did a wrestling match where I played five characters. And I did another character with my arm wrapping around my head and stuff. It was very physical. And when I was done with that set, of course, it was right at prime time, the perfect time to go up a full house. I got a standing ovation my first time on stage.
Wow.
And it's the only time I've ever gotten a standing ovation. I thought, wow. Yeah. And then I just did that. And then that sort of became, you know, kind of what I had decided to do. But it took a couple of years of just goofing around with it before I decided that it might be something I could do as a career. I was going to be a fireman, but then I didn't decide not to do that.
You crack me up. You're a surfer, fireman, writer, comedian.
Yeah, not a fireman, but, you know. The others.
You want to be. Just go with it, Peter. Go with it.
Well, I'd probably be in a lot better place right now if I were a fireman, unless I'd somehow.
Well, listen, but it's interesting that you that you've stayed in Southern California all this time. I mean, it's such a beautiful thing to me.
Yeah. Well,
I've been lucky.
There was a time when I was trying to build a house, a compound in Kauai, kind of like that movie with Harrison Ford,
Oh, yeah.
What was that movie called? Mosquito Coast or something like that?
Oh, Mosquito Coast, yeah, with Anne Heche, right?
Yeah, where she goes crazy. And so I went to Kauai. I went to Kauai, and I started building this place by the beach. And then the economy crashed. I found out that my kid had special needs also, so I couldn't move there. So I had to sell everything. And it happened during the economy crashing. And so
2007.
So it wiped everything out,
Yeah. I could say I'm sorry to hear that. That sucks.
No, it's fine.
All right. Well, let's get to your story because you do have a great story I know coming. But before we do, I did want to remind you guys that Story Smash, the storytelling game show, is back every Friday night. Every Friday night at 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific time, and it is now live on Facebook and on YouTube. It just started on December 4th. Did you happen to see Eddie Feldman play Story Smash by any chance, Peter?
No, I didn't. I heard
Eddie
about
was
it.
Eddie was an expert judge on Story Smash, and gosh, he was so good. I'd love to have you as well. It's super fun. Mm-hmm. So you guys, make sure you check it out. Like I said, live on Facebook every Friday night at 7 p.m. We're playing Story Smash. And check this out. Starting on December 20th, you guys, I'll be bringing back the Story-Worthy Hour of Power. But now I'll be producing it at Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank, California. Of course, this is all virtual, but the show's going to be great. It'll be just like the Hour of Power, 6 true stories in an hour. And it will be available on Flapper's ticket site, and I'll get that over to you guys as well. All right, you guys, he's here right now. Peter Gulke, he is all these things we've been talking about. He's a writer and a gymnast and a stand-up comedian. And he's written some films that are really big films, like Ice Age, The Meltdown, Say It Isn't So, and Drunk Parents with Alec Baldwin. What happened to that? What happened to Drunk Parents?
You know, it came out briefly, and then it went on to what happens is these movies will sometimes get bought up by like this one was bought by Starz, and so it only goes on Starz for like a year, and so no one ever sees it. It just disappears. But then it comes back around, and then it was finally then released on Netflix. No, on Amazon. Amazon?
I think it was. So can we
no,
see it, was
Netflix,
it now on
Netflix?
Okay, so can we see it now on Netflix?
You can see it on Netflix now, yeah. It was like in the top 10 for a while on Netflix.
Yeah, because it's Alec Baldwin and who's the female?
Salma Hayek and Jim Gaffigan. And
gosh.
It's pretty good. It's not bad. It's not the greatest movie, but it's good. It's good. It's
a good entertainment.
It's a good Thanksgiving movie, I think.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah. So too bad that was 4 weeks ago. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's right.
Anyway, you keep working and you keep writing, like you said. And do you work, do you do any Twitter or any Instagram, anything like that?
No, I don't. I don't do any. I'm on Facebook, but I don't really participate. I'll go look at it now and then to see if anybody has died or if there are any celebrations or if family members are talking about me. But
you probably get more accomplished because you're not spending time there.
Yeah, it's sort of like that rabbit hole. You know, I try to eliminate as many of those as I can. And as you know, you know, when you have a kid, you're so busy yourself. I can't imagine. It's tough when you have a kid who needs so much attention, especially these days. That you just to give up that time for nothing is too valuable, you know.
Yeah. So you're absolutely accurate, and time is all we have, you know. So you really have to allocate it properly.
Yeah.
And it changes over time as well. Obviously, you know. Now it's your son, but then it could be something else, and you know. But Twitter for me is pure entertainment. So that is one I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And that's something, especially for comedians. And if you were a comedian, then you know in your heart you're always a comedian.
Yeah. No, Twitter
so someday would be. You'll have to check it out someday.
Yeah, Twitter would be something I would definitely like to do in my past.
Yeah, because it's wordplay.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Peter Gulke.
My three brushes with death, they happened around a time when I was doing stand-up comedy, probably the late 80s or so, 88, 89. And 89? Yeah, probably 89, 90. And so I was working, the first brush with death came when I was working a Saturday night gig in Oxnard, California, with a friend of mine, Bob Worley. And so we had gone out there to do this show where they pay you $50 and they give you a fish dinner. And then and I can't remember how that went, but we were driving home down the Coast Highway, and we're just talking about the show, and it was a two-lane road where one's going this way and the other was going this way. We're headed south, and there's a car headed north, and he's doing probably about 65, 70 miles an hour going north. And so just when the car got about maybe 15 feet away, both of us, Bob and I, realized that it wasn't a two-lane road. It was a one-way road. This is the road headed south, and the northbound was on the other side of these bushes. And so we realized at the same time, we both yelled, just, "Aah!" And the car just went by, missed us by probably an inch because it had that weird, that shh sound, you know, as it went by. And then I looked in my rearview mirror and the car just swerved all over the highway, headed towards traffic. I never saw where it went, but that was such a close call because, you know, I doubt we were wearing seatbelts or anything. Not that that would have really even helped. So that was very traumatic, you know, but we laughed about it later. And then, so that was Saturday, and then Monday during the day, the next Monday, like 2 days later, I was up in the Santa Monica Mountains, and I was, this is the second brush with death, and I was up in the Santa Monica Mountains, and I'd go up there about 3 days a week and mountain bike, and I'd usually go up there for like an hour and a half or 2 hours and ride, and I was up there with a friend, and it was September, there's Santa Ana winds, so it was hot. So I wasn't wearing a t-shirt. Normally, I would always wear a shirt, a riding shirt. And so I was racing my friend down this little single trail going over these hills. And I came down, I went around him and went down this steep incline. And my brakes went out. And so when your brakes go out and you're going fast on a mountain bike, suddenly your speed increases like doubles. It feels like it, you know? So there, I was coming to a turn, and I had to make this turn, or I was going to go over the side of the hill. And so I made the turn, but then I hit a little rise and a bump in the road, and I launched off this hill, and then the trail just dropped off, and I flew, and then I landed right on my chest, and I slid down this shale rock hill all the way, like probably about 20 feet down this shale hill down to the bottom of this hill. And my friend rode up, and it was just a big dust, a lot of dust, and he rode down, and I had knocked the wind out of myself, and I stood up, and all the skin had been ripped off of the front of my body, and so, and then my friend rode up, and he said, "Oh man, your nipple's gone," and I looked down, and there was a rock on it, so it wasn't gone, so that was one thing that was spared, and so so then I got. I got down, we lowered my bike down to the fire trail, and it was really painful, of course, you know, and I lowered the bike down, I start riding down the fire trail, and I'm picking up speed, wind's hitting this wound, it was really painful, that had no brakes still, and so I realized it had no brakes, so I'm dragging my foot, and then I finally get back home, and my girlfriend at the time, who was living at my apartment, I opened the door and she saw me and she immediately burst into tears. And then I said, "I'm just going to go in the shower." And I went in the shower and to rinse this off. And I just rinsed it off and then I passed out in the shower. And then I got up and my friend had gone to the store to get some of this antibiotic stuff, this pain medication. And I put it on just a dab and it was like lighting a match to my chest, you know. And so I just rubbed it all over me. So then I just laid there that whole night on the bed on towels because it was, you know, just awful. And then I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning because I had to catch a flight to Minneapolis to work David Wood's Rip Tickler, so, which is okay. The perfect name for a comedy club if you just had your chest ripped off.
Wait a minute. It was called the rib tickler.
Yeah, David Wood's Rib Tickler.
Did they serve ribs?
They did serve ribs. Yeah, it was like a barbecue place, you know?
Did this just occur to you? You didn't know that?
No, I didn't put the two together until I was thinking about the story that the Rib Tickler was the perfect title for this, you know?
That is so funny. But wait a second. So you went...
Yeah, so I went. I put a I put some bandages, whatever I had on there, and then I put a shirt on and I got on the plane. And during the flight, I took some pain medication, and the shirt was just oozing through.
And, oh, gross.
And there was a kid sitting next to me on the flight with a sucker, and he was kept hitting my chest with a sucker. And so then I got to the rib tickler, and by then, like a 2 days later, the scab had formed a cast around my whole upper body, you know? So then as I was doing the show, I had this routine called Torso Man in my act. And it was a physical thing where I pull my pants down, had a big long shirt. And I was headlining the club, so I had to close. And so in the middle of my act, I would turn around and I would take off the shirt I was wearing and put on this other shirt. And every time I took the shirt off, it would rip off a chunk of scab and I would yell out.
Oh, my God.
And I would yell out, you know. And so, and not only that, but I was staying at a hotel. And so I would get up in the morning and there'd be like, this is really pretty grotesque of a story now that I'm thinking about it. But there was like dried, scab all over the bed, right? And then I didn't think about this until I was thinking about this story again, that when I'd come back from going out in the afternoon, I'd come back, my bed would be made and clean. Some maid every day was having to go in and looking at this awful scene.
Yeah, like she's a nurse.
Yeah, I know. So then I did the shows there. I did those shows. And
did you consider canceling? Did you consider going to a doctor?
No. I never really went to a doctor. So, I should have. That's what everybody tells me. Everybody says exactly that. What, did you go to a doctor? And I never did go to a doctor because who knows what I could have gotten, some kind of infection. And then I came home and that week was rough, of course. And then I had to head out. I got home Sunday. And then I left Monday for Seattle to work Giggles Comedy Club in Seattle. And so this is where the third brush with death comes. And so I'm in Seattle.
Wait, first of all, I want to hear something, mm-hmm. though. The first thing was on a Friday.
Yeah, Saturday night.
This was on a Saturday Monday. Saturday
this
night.
This one happened on a Monday
brush.
During the day, yeah.
Then Monday. Okay.
And then this was the following Monday after I'd spent a week at the Ritz.
Oh, my gosh.
So then I fly to Seattle where I was headlining Giggles Comedy Club. And while I was doing my act, which was still very physical at the time, it had become more verbal later on, but it was still very physical, the scab was falling off. And so that scab had become like a cast. And I didn't realize it until the scab was gone, the cast was gone, that I had bruised ribs. And so it was even more painful, you know? So I had to do those shows that week at Giggles with bruised ribs, and it was awful. But then I was staying at the comedy condo at Giggles, and so I came home on a Friday night after two shows. It was about 1 a.m, and I was in bed reading a book, and there was a huge explosion. I was on the second floor of this condominium. There was a huge explosion right next door. I fell out of the bed. It was so shocking, you know. I fell out of bed on the floor. I got up, and I heard, I just waited for a second, and I heard some screaming. And I went, and I saw some light flashing near my window. And I went and looked out the window, and I heard a guy screaming like he was on fire, which he was on fire. And so I guess when people scream when they're on fire, it sounds very, you know, it's very specific. He was like, you know, I'm on fire, but he wasn't saying I'm on fire. And he ran down. And so I was in the living room. I came back into my bed looking for something to put him out with. And I grabbed my comforter off the bed that I was in. But then I ran out with the comforter and I stopped because I wondered, what's the comforter made of? If it's like a nylon polyester, is it going to melt to him? So then I chucked that, and I went and looked out the window, and I saw that he was already down there in the parking lot, and there were people outside, so he was probably okay. And so then I went and I called up. I looked out the door, and there was just flames everywhere, and I was I called the club owner, and it was like 1:30 at night. I called the club owner, and I said, "Hey, there's a fire. The building's on fire. I don't know if I'm going to be able to stay here tonight. But there were no, it was just a voicemail. And so I said, so anyway, okay, talk to you later, you know? And so, and then I grabbed all my stuff and I put it out in the balcony of this club, thinking that if the place burned down, maybe my stuff will be saved out here. And then I got dressed and I went downstairs and I had to like duck under the flames all around my my little place.
Oh my
and I got
God.
Downstairs and the whole side of the building was on fire. And the fire department showed up and they put it out. And my side was actually okay. It was the only little unit that was still okay to okay, you know. So then I waited out there and they started hauling out bodies. And so
okay, wait a second. Were there fire alarms going off in the building?
No. It was just like condos, and so it was just fire department, police.
No. But weren't there fire alarms going off, like from your units?
No, I think the explosion was so loud. I don't even know if they had. Well, maybe they had smoke detectors back then, but there weren't any in my unit,
wow.
And so. So the explosion was so loud that everybody, I mean, there were the whole neighborhood, everybody was outside watching this fire, you know? And also there was a kid, I mean, this is awful, but there was a kid ran back to get a doll. The mother went in for her. This is right next door to the place, you know? And they didn't make it out. And then the father of the guy didn't make it out. So all these people had died in this huge explosion. And I was right next door. So I got lucky for some reason it didn't blow this way. Although everything was burnt right up to the door of my place. And so then they put us in a police van, and they were telling people who lived here that they were going to take us to a place where we could spend the night, a shelter. And so I didn't want to stay in a shelter. So I got out, I snuck out of the van, and then I just went through the yellow tape that they had put up and dripping water and death. And I snuck upstairs into my condo, and I stayed there that night, which was kind of creepy because people had just died all around me.
you stayed in that burnt-up condo.
Yeah, it was very creepy. And then I got up in the morning around 10 in the morning, and I opened the curtains to look outside to see what's going on. And there were news vans out there. And when I opened the curtains, everybody in the parking lot all spun around and pointed at me like, look, there's a guy in there. And so then I snuck out and they wanted to interview me, but I just went around them to go to the store. And so then I spent the rest two more nights going back to this condo and sneaking through the yellow tape and up the stairs and into my place where the power was out. It was coldly out. And I stayed there the next 2 days.
How old were you at this time?
I was probably... How old was I? I was probably 35.
You were, like, you're the most adventurous person I've ever heard. So the idea was you stay in the condo because you don't want to get, you don't want, it's money? Like,
no,
you can't get another place?
I was just fine with it. The club owner, was fine. So I didn't really care. It was okay with me. And it was either stay there or stay with the club owner at his place. And I didn't really like the guy, so I didn't want to stay at his place.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted my own space, even though it was like,
burnt down.
Death all around. It was creepy, you know.
And didn't it smell?
Dripping.
Doesn't it smell?
Yeah, it smelled. It smelled like it was all burnt lumber and chemicals and bodies, you know.
Oh my gosh!
But I got on the plane and I was flying back to L.A. And just as you fly over like near San Francisco, there's always a lot of turbulence there. I hit the worst turbulence I've ever been in. I mean, it was dropping out of the sky. But I realized,
so scary.
I actually thought that, because I had already thought about this three brushes with death. I had already talked to somebody about it. Said, I just had three brushes with death. And then, so this would be a fourth. And I said, they don't happen in fours.
I don't think
so,
it does.
So I'm not going to die in a plane crash. And I didn't. I made it home because I'm here. And so then I, but then I got home and I did stay in my apartment for a couple of days, though, sort of to stay out of trouble, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I didn't know what
was
happening.
Your chest healed?
My chest healed fine. For years, I still have a couple of scars, but it all healed fine. I've been told that that the skin on my chest is extremely soft.
Yeah,
nice.
Because it's brand new. Yeah,
it's brand new baby skin. It's baby skin.
I've never really understood the mountain biking thing. Like, I've tried it and I've mm-hmm. done it. I never want to do it, but I always would go along with what everybody else is doing. But it's like so flipping precarious. And I've seen guys in Colorado where mm-hmm. they do like an elevated mountain biking. So they're 10 and 11 feet off the ground, and they build these rails, like these tracks, and they go all the way down the mountain, like a keystone.
Yeah. They're
at like a keystone ski area, mm-hmm. there's an entire mountain biking schematic. I don't know how you say it, but I mean the ones with the rails, not just, it's for real, obviously, crazy people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mammoth Mountain has a great, in the summer, you can go all the way up to the top of the mountain and ride your mountain bike down. It's great. I like actually climbing the hills more than going downhill. I don't know why I like that so much, but I do like climbing hills more. I haven't mountain biked much in years.
Well, though. You know, you can also climb up Big Bear, like in the summertime, climb up Big mm-hmm. Bear and then just take a bike down.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
yeah.
different trails and some that are very like family friendly, and then the ones mm-hmm. that get like I was saying, it just gets so dangerous so fast. And did you have a helmet on?
I did have a helmet. Yeah, did have a helmet.
Thank
Luckily.
God.
Yeah.
Were you happy?
Yeah.
I bet that really was a relief when it occurred to you what had happened.
Oh, that I was wearing a helmet?
Did you think like, oh, thank God?
No, not really. I was thinking about where all my flesh had just gone. I was thinking about...
Your flesh. I thought you said flesh. Oh,
no,
yeah. oh, God. It wasn't bleeding, though. It was just like white, and then it turns red, right? When you skin yourself like that.
You know, it's just red. It was just red because it's... Yeah, it was pretty shocking, you know?
Yeah, brush burn on a shale rock.
Yeah, but you know, when you're younger, you heal a lot faster. So it healed up pretty quick. And I was back mountain biking not long after that.
Peter, you seem like such the outdoors guy. Did you spend a lot of time at... what's the name of the outdoor store?
Oh, REI? Or
Do you spend a lot of time at REI?
No, I don't. You know, I've really... Because I really, what I've sort of narrowed it down to, because I have too many leisure activities, is I eventually had to narrow it down to just surfing, and then trying to keep fit enough to surf. And but I do like to go down to like Mexico, not recently, but down there and camp on the beach down there in Mexico. That's always fun. But
that's really nice. Yeah. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love all that. You know, I've never actually surfed, and I've always wanted to, because I know I'm really good at bodyboarding. I have a boogie board, and I'm good at that. And I can even do, like, on a paddle board, mm-hmm. you know, the stand-up paddle boards. I can even do a headstand on a paddle board.
Really?
Yeah. So I have really good balance. So I think I could really...
Are you a good swimmer?
I'm a really good swimmer.
Okay, I'll give you a surf lesson whenever you want it.
Where I used to be. I used to be a good swimmer. But yeah, I mean, I still swim.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, you know, when everybody else is just standing in the shallow end, I'll be doing laps just because I like it.
Has your daughter been surfing?
No. And she's growing up in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Los Feliz, so it's across town. And sometimes I do get a little guilty sometimes thinking, why am I not putting my kid, like forcing her mm-hmm. to go to surf camp? Just so that when she's in her 20s and 30s, she can say, you know, when I was in surf camp.
Hey, you know what? I've got a friend, one of my good friends, Jazz Kaner. He's a comic. He was a comic. But now he has a surf school business called Bonsai Surf School in Huntington Beach. So if you and your daughter want to, you can go down there and probably do it for free. And have a day
of Bonsai Surf Club.
Bonsai Surf, Surf Club. And you can go down there.
Tell him Peter said he'll pay for it.
No, I'll go down there. I'll meet you guys down there.
Oh, wow. That would be so fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And why is Huntington special? It's just where that surf club is.
Yeah, it's just where the surf place is, but also it's a nice place for the waves are kind of gentle, and it's a nice place to learn to surf or to try it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I love the water so much. At the end of the day, I want to have one of those trailers in Paradise Cove.
Oh, yeah, I know. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, it really would. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you were saying, like, you have so many activities, but a lot of times I think when you grow up in Southern California, there are so many choices.
I know, yeah.
You know, because we do have the mountains. We do have the oceans. So I'm happy to bring my daughter up here.
Yeah, that's great. I love it here.
Yeah, yeah.
I tried to move.
Yeah, when you tried to go to Hawaii.
Tried to move to Hawaii, yeah. But I always came back here. And also traveling throughout the country doing stand-up, I really never found a place. Nice places, but I never really found a place that sort of does it for me the way that SoCal does, you know?
Yeah. And, oh, I like that. Yeah. Yeah,
and I wanted to get out of here, but then when things didn't work out in Kauai, I came back and I just sort of fell in love with the place again. So it's great.
Yeah, it's interesting when you leave and you come back.
Yeah.
They're definitely, the last time I left the country, I think, I don't know if it was the last time, but when I was in Istanbul on a little vacation thing a couple of years ago, when I came back from LA, I was blown away with how green it is mm-hmm. here. I was just blown away. You know, because our city has so much green in it, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, from the air, it doesn't look like, you don't even see the skyscrapers half the time in LA.
Yeah. It's because.
You know, there's no city
central. No, it's because we take everybody's water from them. That's why it's so green.
Yeah, we do. We steal a lot of water. It's true. Los Angeles is one of the only places in the world where the desert meets
mm-hmm.
the sea.
Yeah.
Thank mm-hmm. you very much. There
it's
you
great.
Go, Peter. Take that with
I love
you.
It.
Well, listen, this has been so much fun. You have great stories. No kidding. Thank you, Eddie Feldman.
Hey, it's story worthy.
Oh, man. You have three story worthy brushes with death,
mm-hmm.
slash four, actually. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks a lot, Christine.
Yeah, thank you. All right, you guys, don't forget to check out storyworthypodcast.com for the latest stuff, what's going on. You can also follow me over there on Twitter at storyworthy. And one more time, on behalf of the very talented Peter Gulke, thank you so much, Peter. This was really fun.
Yeah, that was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be.
What did you think I was going to do?
I don't know. I have no idea. We don't know each other, so it could have been anything. But it turned out to be great. I loved it.
Well, I'm so glad. Good. Welcome to 2020. The headphones
are
on. All right, you guys. My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.